Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the latest Coleman Had a Dream podcast. I am joined, as always, by Ruth. How are you doing, Ruth?
Good. What about you?
I'm good, thanks. It is all of a sudden in the Netherlands become the hottest place on the planet. It was legitimately the hottest place in Europe last week. I went to Madrid on a school trip, and it rained the whole time, and my wife is sending pictures of her sunbathing. Absolutely ridiculous, but yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely and warm here. Shira the dog is slowly melting, but other than that, all is good as the countdown to the end of term begins and the countdown to football starting up again. Have you got any news for us?
Well, I went to my first proper Western rodeo on Saturday night.
Wow.
The works. Bucking bulls, bucking horses, barrel racing, try and get a saddle on an unbroken horse. The works. It was every cliche you can imagine and immense fun. It was wonderful. Wonderful evening.
I'm jealous of that. I fully expected that story to end with you trying to ride a horse for the first time or something like that, and ended up with a broken.
No. It was genuinely insane.
I can
imagine.
Crowd
was probably about 10,000.
Bloody hell!
And it's a rodeo. It's actually quite a big deal. It's a rodeo that's big enough to get like world champions in various events, but small enough that it's basically just the locals that are going. And so it's just a lot of beers, frankly, Dave, a lot of beers and queuing for the shuttle back into town. But I don't really know the first thing about horses, but you can appreciate the kind of art of it and the skill level. It was actually damn impressive. Yeah.
Well, I'm absolutely jealous of that. I've got nowhere near as a funnier story to tell, unfortunately. The best I can do is tell you that recording on the 12th of June, which is the day that Wales drew 1-1 with Switzerland in the Euros in what was rescheduled and played in 2021. And I know this because it was also the day that we brought Shira the dog home for the first time. So it's 2 years of having the dog with us. But I also remember that day, not just for the football, because for those who have been with us for a couple of years, that was also the day that when Aaron Ramsey didn't quite connect to a chance quite late on in the game, that I punched a bar stool and I thought it was a highly padded bar stool and it really wasn't, and I broke my hand. So that is the real reason that I remember 2 years ago today for bringing home my dog. And instantly, as soon as I was home, going straight to the pub and going from the pub to hospital and coming home with my arm in a cast, as you can imagine, much to my wife's delight, that I came home and couldn't do anything with the dog for the next week because I broke my hand and I was told not to use my hand. She was livid. Anyway, enough of that. First of all, thank you to everyone who's taken part and joined us and supported us at buymeacoffee.com/Coleman's Dream. Raised a decent amount of money on there, which helps keep our website going and keeps this podcast going. So thank you to everyone. If you are interested in supporting us and chucking us a few quid, please do go to buymeacoffee.com/Coleman's Dream. Equally, if you want to give a little something and get something for yourself as well, please go to bagsybags.com. You can use the code CHAD10 for 10% off. And whilst you're there, you can get yourself some great stuff made in the Rhondda. Some bags, some mugs, some jumpers, some t-shirts, all sorts of great stuff there. So head to bagsybags.com and use the code CHAD10 for 10% off. Also worth pointing out that as we build up to the Turkey and Armenia games on Friday and Monday, there's going to be a lot of stuff on our website this week. Chris is doing some great match previews for us. We've got a couple of people doing match reviews as well. People are going to the games and people are going to be out in Turkey, as well as some match ratings for you as well. So please keep an eye on ColemanHadADream.com in the next few days around the matches, and we'll have some extra content for you there, as well as this podcast, of course. Ruth, obviously the game on Friday against Armenia, where are you going to be watching it?
I'm not quite sure about that one yet, because both games are sort of lunchtime here. The good news, though, is that Monday is a public holiday. Oh. So we're both off work, so I have a driver. Oh. So Monday I'm looking forward to. So we'll, but Friday I might just have to muddle through a bit on that, yeah.
Well, normally, quite recently, our games have been on Dutch TV, so I've been able to watch them, but it's not on Dutch TV this time, so I will have to be using my highly legal VPN and finding myself a way of watching the game there on Friday. I'm going to watch that at home, I think. And then on Saturday morning, I'm heading off to Schiphol Airport, flying out to Istanbul for 2 days, and then flying to Samsun on Monday, the morning of the match. And hopefully enjoying some fine weather, some fine beer and some fine food, and hopefully coming home from Turkey with 3 points in my back pocket. We shall see, but I'm very much looking forward to that trip. It is reliant, actually, I say all these things, on my friend Oz, who occasionally listens, and I hope he does to this one, who has told me last week that he's only just renewed his passport because it had less than 6 months to go. And that's supposed to be arriving back with him on Tuesday. So God knows what's going to happen there. he also told me he doesn't want to book his flight until his passport's come back. So there's also a legitimate chance that I might be going to Turkey on my own, which would be shit. And I'll be forced to kill him. His renewal passport would be irrelevant because he would be dead. Anyway, I hope he does listen to this. And I do hope, Oz, that you've sorted your life out. And we are, in fact, going to Istanbul on the weekend. Anyway, Ruth, Friday is the Armenia game. How are you feeling about it? What's your thoughts on the game?
It's one of those ones that's got to be 3 points.
Yeah.
You always worry about these games. I think we mentioned it in the last pod. These June games are always feel a bit more of a lottery than some of the more sort of mid-season games. I think some of the lads will have clocked off best part of a month ago, really. Obviously, they've been having the training camp in Portugal. And, you know, these days, people look after themselves even in the summer. It's not, they don't have down tools like they would have done a generation ago. But it is a sort of, it always feels like a bit of a hide into nothing. You know, you have to get the 3 points. And if you do, everybody goes, well, of course, the game you should have won. And if you don't, you just dragged over the coals. So they're always a bit of a sort of niggling worry, these types of games. What are your immediate thoughts then?
I can't really disagree with anything you've said. I think it's going to be a weird game. I think it's an end of season thing. Lots of players tired after a long season. And I think that, you know, anything could happen there as a consequence. I think it's going to be really tight, similar to the Latvia home game, where I don't think there'll be many goals in the game. But like you said, we can all chuck excuses in. You've got to go and win the game. It's as simple as that. If you want to go to tournaments, you've got to win all your home games, especially against teams that are lower ranked, like Armenia. I don't think it'll be a pushover by any stretch, but I think it's very much going to be a tough game, and I think quite attritional as well, where I think one goal is really going to make the difference. They've got quite an interesting record of late, haven't they, Ruth?
Yeah, I had a quick look at their last sort of 15 games, and I mean, at face value, it doesn't look like there's much going on. They've lost 11 and a couple of draws in there. But what was interesting was how many of the results only really fell into place in the very last few minutes of the games. So, for example, they were playing away to the Republic of Ireland, and it was looking like a 2-2 draw. And then the Irish got a penalty in injury time. There was another game, it was friendly, admittedly, but there was a game they were playing against Kosovo, and the Kosovans got an equaliser in 92nd minute, or, you know, deep into injury time. So there's a few of those results that could have very easily gone a different way and given quite a different sheen to the overall feel. So I don't think the kind of on paper record might be quite as representative as, you know, one would want to interpret it as just 11 defeats in 15. I think there's a bit more going on than that suggests.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The one stat that came out to me, there was two that jumped out to me, actually. One is that we've played them twice before and never beaten them. We drew both games, so that is a happy omen. Last won an away match of any kind in March 2021, which was against Liechtenstein. They did have a couple of away wins around there against Gibraltar and the like, but that was the last time that they won an away game. They actually last won a home competitive match the game after that, where they beat Romania 2-1 at home. So I take what you're saying. I think you're absolutely. I was going to say something similar, but the one thing that I do think is that they do consistently do that. if you know what I mean, it's not like they are definitely capable. I think the game against the Republic of Ireland, both games is a good example of that. They scored some good goals in that game. Spurta Sian is their biggest threat. I'm almost certain to have said that wrong, but that's it, their biggest threat. He's got a great goal against Ireland, Republic of Ireland, in the Nations League, and played very, very well in the return leg, which, as you say, was 2-2 right until the dying seconds where they gave away a penalty. They've got someone who kind of plays just off the striker called Barshegyan, who's pretty experienced. He picked up his 50th cap against Scotland quite recently, and he's the squad's top goal scorer, but only with 8 goals. Someone else I also found interesting when I was going through this was they have someone called Norberto Briasco in the squad up front, who's only played 11 games for them, but is on the books of Boca Juniors and was actually born in Argentina. So fascinated to know how he has ended up playing football for Armenia. How do you think the game is going to go, Ruth? What do you think the game is going to look like?
I mean, I think they'll sit back and probably hope for a draw. I was watching some highlights of their game against Turkey from the March window. And if you kind of just look at the box score, they go up early to an own goal, but then Turkey score in the 35th minute, the Turks get their second in the 64th minute. I think on paper, it kind of looked like, oh, well, basically Turkey were in charge of this game and, you know, they got what they needed out of it. But actually looking at the highlights, there was a lot more going on from the Armenians than I'd expected, if I'm being fair. And particularly in the last 20 minutes, they had probably half a dozen, not absolutely clear cut, you know, your header in your hands, if you miss it kind of chances, but decent chances in the last 20 minutes. It was a game that was more characterised by yellow cards than anything else, to be honest. There was 9 yellow cards given across the game, and that probably says, admittedly, it was even with the Turks on the yellow cards, but it probably says a lot about their sort of attitude to the play. I think we're going to see that kind of niggliness from them. I think they would come and be very satisfied with a draw and hope to perhaps nick something unexpectedly.
Yeah, I agree. I think playing on the break is definitely the way they're going to go and look at it. And it's interesting you mentioned the discipline there, actually. I also wrote down that they got 4 red cards in their 6 Nation League games. The discipline is definitely something. I think that's definitely something to watch out for, rather. I think the way they do like to play is by coming out and breaking in wide areas, seeing if you can get behind the fullbacks and try and pull the ball back and see if you can get someone running from midfield. And they don't tend to commit huge numbers, but the one ball back and hope that something happens from that pullback. That's how the own goal against Germany, for example, that's how that came, was a pullback and kind of got bundled in by a Turkish player, although there was an Armenian there who was ready to kind of tap it in if the Turkish guy didn't do so. But that's how they've scored a few of their goals. And again, similar sort of thing. They also are not afraid of a shot from distance. You know, those goals they scored against Republic of Ireland, for example, were both long rangers. The one at home was a long ranger as well. So they're certainly not afraid of that. If they get forward, they'd rather have a shot and see it blaze over rather than just try and work something. Once they get forward, they will try and make something happen, good or bad. The big thing for me was
that was something I found striking in the game with Turkey that I watched. Neither side was hesitant about taking a shot from distance. I think that's something we have to be aware of, definitely.
And I think also to go with that, I think the players in behind the fullbacks is something that we have to be careful of, because we do like to play our fullbacks quite high up the pitch, with likely going to be Roberts and Nico Williams. They do like to get forward, Nico especially, so I do think they will look to take advantage of that and make the most of it. But again, it's just about whether they'll commit numbers going forward. In terms of how it suits us, I think the one to kind of watch, if you like, in a defensive way, is their goalkeeper. He is absolutely terrible. I think the goals against Republic of Ireland, I think, could have done better with a lot of them. Absolutely hate to cross. The amount of times he either stands perfectly still and doesn't come for it and hopes for the best, or kind of comes and flaps at the goals that they conceded against Scotland. I think they won the game. I think Scotland won the game 2-0. They conceded three goals. One was disallowed from VAR, but all of them, including the disallowed goal, were crosses, and that was a disallowed on a very tight offside. Keeper just doesn't know what to do, especially across the six-yard box. He really, really doesn't seem comfortable or confident there. So I think that is definitely something to keep an eye out for. I would also say they look quite disorganised at the back. And once they concede one, they either go balls to the wall in terms of trying to get another goal, trying to get a goal back, which leaves them completely open, or they just seem to kind of panic a bit and concede more goals. And I think if you look at some of their recent results, they, you know, there's a couple of 3-0s, 4-1s, 3-2. They really do look to, well, not look to concede goals, but they really do concede goals once they've conceded one. So that first goal is going to be key, I think, and hopefully for us. They like to play a five at the back rather than like a three in wing backs. Yeah. It's a definite five at the back with either a three or four in midfield, depending on who they're playing against. So I totally agree. I think they're coming for a draw. They want to sit in and then hopefully nick something on the break and get wide. And I do think, to be fair, that is something, as I said just a minute ago there, we do need to watch out for, because equally against Latvia, you know, they got balls into the box and looked to pressure us in that massive bloke up front who did cause us a few problems, to be fair. So I do think that whilst I'm saying about their goalkeeper, they will be looking at us and saying, getting the ball into the box and being in and around it, hunting for a second ball is definitely the way to get at us. So I think they'll probably be saying something relatively similar about us as well.
Harry Jan, who's their captain, he very much is the anchor in that back five, isn't he? And I think he stands out as the kind of the nounce and the sort of governance back there. I'm just not sure what either side of him is really that quite as there as he is. In their play. It's very much a 5-4-1 sort of formation, isn't it?
Yeah.
I am intrigued what they're going to do up front. They've in the squad, they've picked three what you'd think of as straight centre forwards. Briasco Balakian, the Boca Juniors player that you mentioned, Sargis Abiam, who plays in Cologne, and then a very young player, Grant Leon Ranas. He's the one that intrigues me, who's been with Bayern Munich too, basically, and this summer is in the process of moving to Borussia Mönchengladbach. He's only 19. He played in their friendly against Cyprus in the March window and scored both goals. So his debut, he gets two goals. The other two players that I mentioned, Briasco and Adamyan, have played 46 games total and have two goals total. So it will be very interesting to see if Petrikov goes with the youngster, who seems to be in a little bit of form, or whether he goes with the more sort of steady hands that have been there previously. I think they might let the youngster off the leash, actually, and for exactly the reason that you were saying, that we can look a bit frazzled occasionally at the back, and I wonder whether a 19-year-old kind of like coming at us quick and darting around and messing up play might not be a bad option for them.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and all of a sudden I feel like we're going to lose this game 1-0, which is great, so thanks for that. I don't know if I'm asking this question too soon, Ruth, but have you got any stats for us, because I do know you like a stat.
Not so much a stat. I thought it was it's just one of those strange quirks of footballing fate. Oleksandr Petrikov, the manager, was the Ukrainian manager. And I think it's an interesting way that football swings and turns, that he's now with Armenia. Obviously, he'll know as well. Not a stat as such. It was just, that was an interesting thing that caught my eye.
Oh, God. The thing that we're best at here, Ruth, for long-time listeners, we'll know that we are excellent predictors of what's going to come next. What is your prediction for this match going to be, Ruth?
It feels like I'm overly confident, but I'm going to go 2-0 to us.
Oh, When you said overly confident, I thought you were going to say like 8-0 or something there. I think 2-0 as well, which I appreciate is very predictable. But I think that early goal is key. I think if we get one, I think we'll get a second. I think if the game goes on a bit, I think, you know, then it might change. I think maybe we'll nick it 1-0. But I do think we'll win this game. I think I like to think, at least anyway, that the days of us kind of toiling and toiling against these teams and not really getting much out of it, with the exception of Estonia in the last campaign, is all but gone, I think. So I think, I think we'll get the win here, 1 or 2-0, I will say. Obviously, after that, which is on Friday night at home, we will have a match report for you, as I said, in written form, which is going to be on ColemanHadADream.com, and I'll share that on Twitter and our Facebook. So please do get involved with that and go and have a look at Chris's match report, which will be out hopefully soon after the game, as well as the match ratings as well. So keep an eye out for that. Obviously, after the Armenia game at home, the players travel to Turkey and Samsun. I mean, it's quite a strange thing, this, Ruth, because I'm sure you've looked at the stats and stuff and watched some and some highlights and stuff as well. But this Turkey team are really quite a strange team, I think, in terms of their results recently and how they play and everything else. Is there anything that's kind of caught your eye about them, having watched a few clips yourself?
I think strange is a good way of describing it. They're sort of quite Machiavellian in their performances. You know, on paper it looks good. They've won 10 of their last 15, and that includes wins over Scotland and Czechia, in fairness, but admittedly most of them are friendlies. But then, to give it some perspective, we've won 3 of our last 15. So, you know, it's numbers can tell what you want them to tell. I think, like, looking at the game they played against Croatia, the Croats won 2-0 away in Turkey. And it was a classic game of the Croats doing what they need to do and not much more. You know, like, they scored 2 goals on their first 2 shots and then just kind of managed the game, and their quality showed. But in fairness to the Turks, Livakovic made some excellent saves in that game, 3 at least genuinely excellent saves, and another 3 or 4 good saves. So the Turks could have got a great deal more out of that game, I think. And I think they will go in with perhaps a bit more confidence than the paper results from March might indicate, because there were phases of that game against the Croats where they really played well.
Yeah, I think that's a great shout. And they're just such a mixed team. And I think what you've said there, I think they always, with the exception obviously of that Croatia game, seem to score. You know, some of their odd results they've had recently, they beat Armenia, but they have lost. They drew, 3-3 with Luxembourg, scored a late equaliser in that game. They lost 2-1 to the Faroes. You know, they're a real kind of hit and miss side. But as you say, if you look at it over a longer period, they, you know, their results are really no different to ours. The one thing that I think sets them apart, really, in terms of quality is Calhanoglu, who obviously plays for Inter in the middle of midfield, who's their captain. Well, I say middle of midfield, sort of like a number 10. But I've noticed they're quite a mixed squad. 15 of their players have 10 caps or less, meaning obviously that there's 10 players with more than that. But I thought that was quite interesting. They're obviously a squad in transition themselves. There are only 2 players in the squad over 30 as well. So again, that really highlights this kind of mixed nature as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Just to go back to the games against the Faroes, Armenia, Luxembourg in the Nations League, those games were not always their strongest, and they did kind of try and utilise the Nations League to blood some players kind of regardless of the outcomes, which they hope, I'd imagine, is going to pay dividends for them now they've got players with international experience, and they kind of wrote off the Nations League to a certain extent, results-wise anyway. But yeah, I think they're a really, really fascinating team, and I don't really know what's gonna come. Have you got any things that you noticed in terms of where they're strong or weak or where we can get at them?
Well, I think if you look at the back line, you've got Demiral, Celic, Soinenko. That's a strong unit. Yeah. Calhanoglu obviously is kind of their controlling number 10 and does play like a a very sort of textbook number 10, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, they've got some goalkeeping questions too. I think it's part of it from our point of view in that particular game, with it being away, might be about the atmosphere, might be about the crowd, might be about whether they get a few chances early and the crowd are up and they're positive, or whether we're slightly more on the front foot and we're kind of pacifying things a little bit. I think that's unlikely. I think we're going to be the ones that are sitting back. I think they'll be coming at us. And I think we've got to be careful about that and just try and switch the momentum when we can and just not get suckered into this kind of defensive-minded game, which doesn't particularly suit us, the way we're structured. And also, going back to what we were saying about the Armenia-Turkey game, don't get into a sort of yellow card with them either, because I think that could get the crowd up as well.
Yeah, they're quite, like I say, what you said there about playing off the, how we're going to play off the ball and, you know, a defensive game, whatever. That's the one thing that really caught my eye, is that in these last two games, they've had a full change of shape depending on the opponent. So against the Armenians, they played three at the back and kind of high full backs and only one holding midfielder, Korchu, if that's how you say his name, who plays for Feyenoord, who won the league here in the Netherlands this year, with obviously Calhanoglu pushing on a bit. When they played the home, when they played away to Croatia, they actually played four at the back and two holding midfielders, and tried to kind of shore things up that way and look to kind of hit them on the break, which, relatively speaking, I think, like you said, they did do pretty well. So I'm intrigued to see how that's going to work itself out. I would imagine that they might go with the four at the back against us to sort of match up against us a little bit, because I think that's what we will do as well. So I think that will be interesting. I think they'll match up against us and just see if they can kind of beat us man-to-man, if you like, on the day, rather than... Because I think against Armenia, they knew they were going to have the ball. They could leave through at the back and they could really push the wingers on a bit. Whereas I think they know they won't be able to do that against us, because that will certainly suit us with the high wingers we've got. Equally, they do look to play on the break a little bit. And I think they play with these two wide players. Sometimes it's like a three where you've got genuine wingers. Sometimes it's two more that kind of sit a little deeper. But still, again, they're looking to get into those wide areas in behind. And I think that's where they're going to be their biggest threat on the break. But again, looking at it, you mentioned the goalkeeper there. I mean, they do seem to love conceding a goal from crosses, especially at set plays. I mean, as I said, the games against Armenia, Luxembourg and the Faroes, all of those teams scored goals against them from some kind of cross, whether it was a corner or some kind of clever set play or just like an open play cross. And they do seem to really struggle picking up the second ball there. So I think, as a consequence, Kiefer Moore will be massive in terms of what he can do. And as you said, you're not picking up yellow cards and not getting drawn into some sort of slugfest with him, I think, is key. But I think what Kiefer Moore does is gonna dictate a lot of how that game goes, I feel. What was I going to add there? Yeah, have you got any stats? Because I've got two slightly enjoyable stats at this point that I would like to share.
All right, you go for it.
Before Turkey lost to Croatia in their previous qualifier, would you like to have a guess at when they last lost a home qualifying match?
Oh, God, I dread to think. 2019.
They last lost a home qualifier in 2017. They lost 3-0 at home to Iceland in World Cup 2018 qualifying. And I could be wrong, Ruth, and I know this is not a relevant piece of information for anyone else who listens to this, but I think that was the day that you and I watched Wales play, I think, Austria in the World Cup qualifiers, and I dislocated my shoulder, because I remember being at the pub beforehand, and it was quite a hot day, because I remember we going to the hospital afterwards, and Joy came in, and the woman at the hospital thought that she was there. They were there for her rather than me, because she was so bright red. They thought she had sunstroke. I'm sure she never listened to this podcast. She's never going to hear that story. But and I remember us being at the pub, and there were a couple of Icelandic blokes in the pub, and I could be wrong. Your memory is going to be infinitely better than mine, but I think that was the day we watched the end of that match, and Iceland won 3-0.
Okay, it could well be. I mean, I remember the shoulder part. I'm not so up on Icelandic fixtures.
I too remember the shoulder part. They last lost a competitive game of any kind because that was just a qualifier, was the 2017. In 2020, which was 1-0 to Hungary, which is still a fairly impressive record. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm pretty. I don't want to say scared because I don't know what was going to happen, but I think it's going to be a really, really tough game there, and I think the crowd is going to get up, and I think it's going to be. It's not a massive stadium, so I think it'll be quite hostile, and yeah, I think it's. I think it's going to be a real battle, this one, and for me, any sort of draw we can get out of here is going to be a big win. That doesn't make sense, but you know what I mean.
I mean, I would take a win emotionally. Yes, I would. Yeah. I would gladly settle for a draw right now. I my prediction would be they win 1-0, unfortunately, but I think I would. Yeah, I would take a draw every day of the week in this game.
They always do seem to score, so I'm going to say, because I don't want to commit to us losing, so I'm going to say 1-1. It dawned on me when I was thinking back through the Rolodex of my mind the other day that I've never actually seen Wales win away. I've seen us win at the Euros against Northern Ireland, I was at that match, but I have never seen Wales win an away game, so I may have to stop going after this one if this doesn't go well.
Maybe you can miss that plane at Skibbol.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at this rate, Oz is definitely is not coming, is he? He's with his hooky passport and no flight. So I may as well just be easier to leave the wasted money and just stay at home. We will see. Yeah, I think it's important that we... there's one more thing I want to add, and then we'll talk about us. My Uncle Paul is a big Man City fan. He's been going home and away for years. I've mentioned him on the pod before. He went to Istanbul for the Champions League final a couple of days ago, and he said...
Is he home yet?
Nope. Or
he's still lost in Istanbul somewhere.
I think they fly back today, actually, on the Monday, under a huge... Some of the pictures he sent me, I dread to think what state they'll have been in today, but there you go. He's been out there, and he said that they went to Taksim Square, which is apparently a really lovely part of the city, and was where a lot of the Man City fans and a lot of people in the city do their drinking. He said that to be very careful, because he said there's a group of eight of them, and of the eight, seven of them had their wallets pickpocketed in the same 5-minute spell, basically. He said he would love to blame that on the beer, but they were all stone cold sober. It was before they actually started drinking at all. It was about 11 o'clock in the morning. So just to be very aware that if you're in these big places out in Istanbul, if anyone's going to Samsun via Istanbul, that they are being kind of targeted. So just be very careful. He said out and around, you know, the quieter, less touristy parts of the city, he said there were no bother at all, no trouble, no, you know, issue with any fans. No one, you know, mentioned anything about their wallets or whatever. So just be very, very wary, I would say, for anyone going there. He said he had a great time. It wasn't too expensive either. He really, really enjoyed it. But obviously, just to be careful that nothing bad happens to anyone when they're out in those sort of big areas there, I suppose. He also said it's just a sprawling city, which I suppose I knew, but he said getting home after anything, especially later in the evening, was also an absolute headache. So public transport is not the best and stops reasonably early, so worth keeping an eye out for there and planning how you're going to get back to your digs any night for anyone who was going out there. So yeah, a little bit of tourist information. Was it Judith Chalmers who did that Holidays in the Sun?
Yeah, we've resurrected her.
There you go, back from the dead. I don't even know she's dead. But there we go. Let's talk about us, Ruth. From what I've seen, which I'm relatively surprised at, actually, we've had no kind of pullouts of the squad. There's no real stories, and I am touching every piece of wood I can find here, that there's no real stories about people with knocks and niggles, and everyone seems to be fine. Everyone seems to be out enjoying the weather and playing golf in Portugal. I saw a brilliant Conor Roberts video of him kind of discussing his swing and Daniel James's swing, and who was the other one? And was it Adam Davis, I think, the other one? Anyway, he was taking the piss out of their golf swings, which was absolutely brilliant. Loved that. So yeah, I don't see there's any news of any pullouts, which is a positive sign for us.
Yeah. Did Amps get through Sunday okay?
He did, yeah. I'll talk about that in a minute. I don't know how many people watch that. One of the strangest games of football I've ever seen in my whole life. How Spezia are even in the running to stay up. I've seen them play the last three games just because I've been interested in Ampadu. My God, they are an awful football team. I'll talk about that game in a minute, but it was one of the strangest football matches I think I've ever seen. But Ampadu came through that well. He was one of the highlights of the team because he got done for what was the, what ended up being the third goal. He was a bit on his heels, a bit unbalanced, and kind of got turned a bit and then couldn't recover quick enough. Did kind of flick off him and go past the keeper, so he was a little bit unlucky in the outcome. But I mean, he has got a lot to do in the defence there. The number 25, the holder midfielder, was just, I mean, it could have been Shearer the dog running around there, just absolute, just headlessly chasing the ball around and never getting anywhere near it. It was like Shearer chasing a pigeon. It was mad. Anyway, let's focus on her through. I think realistically, I think we're going to start with four at the back. The only questions, I suppose, we always seem to ask this question: is it going to be Hennessy or Ward playing in goal? What do you think?
I'd go with Ward. I think the page has kind of been turned on that. I got the feeling in March. So yeah, I'd be starting Ward.
Ironically, Hennessy, I think, played the last game of the season for one of the later games of the season for Forest. So he's probably the man in form. At this point, I don't think it matters. I think someone just needs to make a decision. No. For what it's worth, I actually think he might go with Hennessy. But again, I think they're as good as they are for each other. I don't really think it makes a difference. The one that makes it stand for me is that Hennessy started the World Cup games. So that does kind of loom in my mind. But again, I mean, we have this conversation 8 times a year, so yeah. I don't really think it matters. Still, I think you'll go with Hennessy, but what do I know? Do you agree with me that we'll go with four at the back
in this game? Yeah, I might disagree when we get to the Turkey game, but I'd be going four in the back in this one. Yeah, what for?
It's an interesting one actually, because one of the questions we've had was, as I furiously scramble through my notes, is from Mike Jones. Do we think Lockyer would have started if he'd have been fit? And I think that's really interesting, because I think Ben Davis will play centre-half. For me, I think he'll end up doing it with Joe Rodden, who again got some game time in the last few games of the season as Wren looked to get a European place, which I think they did in the end. So I think those two will start centre-halves. But it's an interesting question, really, because Lockyer was in great form and obviously scored the goal, as we mentioned last week, in the playoff semi-final, and started strongly in that playoff final itself before he obviously had his moment, which we still haven't heard any real updates on. But it's an interesting. What do you think?
I might start Meffam and Davies, actually. Oh, really? I can see the plus with Rodden and Davies, just because I think there's a bit more familiarity there. I just think Meppham has really come on so much this season. I like that slightly sort of quieter, calmer nature. And maybe that's a disadvantage if you partner in with Davies, because then they're sort of quite akin in that sense, aren't they? Maybe the grit of Rodden is an advantage then. But so I'm swinging either way on that one. But it would be Davies plus, and I think I'd be inclined to go Davies plus Meppham in this game.
Interesting. Do you think Lockyer would have started?
No, but I think he was genuinely knocking on the door. I think it would have been a decision, but I probably would have gone no at this. As much as anything, because let's obviously assume that what happened in the final didn't, and they'd gone, you know, they'd still gone through and they'd won, and he'd had all the kind of celebrations, all the role of being the captain on top of everything else. It might just be like, you know, just come and enjoy the squad, come and enjoy camp, and kind of. So I'm not sure that's actually changed.
Yeah, ultimately
changed things, but I do think he would have been more in consideration than perhaps he has been in the last few camps.
Yeah, I totally agree. I also think that he's definitely got his own hierarchy of what he prefers in whether it's Rodden and Meppham and Davies. I think to displace one of those three would have required an injury or something. So I agree with you. I don't think he would have played. But thank you for the question, Mike. I think he is knocking on the door, though, absolutely. And I hopefully he can recover from whatever this issue is, and that will help him, and he will be able to come back and be more involved. I personally think that Paige will go with Rodden and Davies, and then I assume we both agree that Nico and Connor Roberts will play as fullbacks.
I'm with that pair.
I think looking at the midfield,
Ampadu and Morel.
Yeah, I just don't.
You're going with both of them?
Yeah, for much, you know, I don't want to labour a conversation for the sake of it, but we also don't really have many options there, do we? To be totally honest. And then I think Ramsey will sort of play as the 10. For me, against Armenia is where I see our kind of conversation point, if you like. Because against Croatia, we played like the 4-4-1-1 sort of thing. And I think that served us well. I think it, you know, we looked to play on the break and take advantage of that. Whereas I think the way we set up against Latvia looked, well, ended up being a bit more of an attacking threat. We sort of played with a three at the back and kind of let Wilson and Ramsey kind of go on a bit and get behind Kiefer Moore and get around Kiefer Moore a little bit more. And we kind of switched that and rotated that depending on how we were doing, whether we had the ball or not. But I do, yeah, I wonder what whether that might change as well, because I do think, I think that the four suits us better. And I think it gives us an opportunity to get our best players in their best position. But it's focusing on the Armenia game for a sec. I would start with Kiefer Moore in the Turkey game. I think I would start with Brennan Johnson up front, and I think I would have.
Sorry, which game are we talking about now? Armenia.
Armenia. Sorry, still? Yeah. Okay. I would start with Brennan Johnson up front, and I would have Daniel James on the left, and I would have probably Harry Wilson on the right, on the premise that he can tuck in and play into a bit more centrally if needs be as well. So that's what I would do in the Armenia game.
So you're not starting more in that game?
No, I just think there's two things there. Is I think the speed is the thing that's going to move the Armenians around a bit. And as I said before, the kind of the cutbacks and everything else, that's that, and running at them and then being a bit disorganized, that's the thing that I think is going to be disorientating for them. So I would get after them with some pace and some vibrancy. We can always bring Kiefer Moore off the bench if needs be, but I also think that if he gets a yellow card and we don't really want to go down that road. I think that for me, that dynamism, especially with Brennan Johnson, is going to be the thing that kind of gets after them.
I can see the argument about a yellow. I can see the plus point of kind of closeting him a little bit with that in mind, particularly with the Turkey game on the Monday. I think I'm favouring a sort of Johnson, Ramsey, James, Moore tet, which I think is harsh on Wilson, because I think he actually played pretty well in the March thing. So I'm kind of teetering on that decision. I just think we play better collectively with Moore, and in a game that we have to win, and you know, on the face of it, of the two games, it's the one we have to win. Yeah. So I'm always a little bit wary of kind of protecting anything for a future game, particularly when the game you're trying to protect is the one you do need to win. So I think that's ultimately why I would start with Moore. It might be that they do something completely different and throw Broadhead in for this, you know, for this game, and see what falls out in the wash, give him a half or something. But I, given this is the one we need the 3 points for, I think I want Kiefer Moore there, because we just play better, we score more goals when he's on the field.
I think if we're going to be chucking in anyone, I think it'd be Brooks. I think I've still got slight reservations about Broadhead. I know we've had this conversation before, we won't do it again. But I think that he's a decent player, but I think Brooks is the one who's going to get, if anyone gets game time, it'll be him. Bagsy,
I can see him coming on for sort of 20 minutes in this game if we're 2-0 up, say. But I'm not sure we're going to be, putting him in a position where we're relying on him in that sense.
Well, Bagsy, who is our sponsor, has asked how much game time we think Brooks will get. Whilst I'm doing this, another second plug, please go to bagsybags.com and use the code CHAD10 for 10% off. I think he asked... I know, I tell you what, I'm getting good at this now. It's only taken 7 years. So he asked, do we think how much game time will he get? Interestingly, I think he's more likely to start the Armenia game. And again, not with an eye to resting anyone, but I think that's the one where we can go a bit more hell for leather a bit. And I think his pace and trickery is the sort of thing that will undo them. I don't think he will start, but I think he's more likely to. I think I agree with you. I think he'll come off the bench if we need to, if we need to get a goal in that Armenia game, perhaps I can see him coming off the bench. Equally, I can see him being a late threat in the Turkey game. If it is 0-0, or let's say we're losing 1-0 or something like that, I can see him being the threat that comes on to kind of weave a bit of magic and have that bit of energy and do something that I don't think many others in our team can do. But yeah, principally, I think you're right. I don't think he'll start either of those games. Although, as I say, if he is going to, I would say it's more likely to be the Armenia game. Looking ahead to the Turkey game, do you think we'll stay with our four at the back, or do you think we might change?
I'd like to see us stay with the four because I think it kind of makes a statement. I think we might switch though. I think we might go to a back five, sacrifice one of the front four. But I think it would be a kind of statement if we stayed with the four of our sort of intent and where we're going in the sort of football journey that we're on. So I'd like to see us stay with four, but I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, whoever's left out of Rodden and Meppham slotted in to make a three at the back.
I would agree with you in that I would like to see us stay with the four. And I think on the basis that we did it in Croatia, I see no reason why he would change it for this. So I think we will play both games with the four. And I think that is going to be our way that we set up moving on. I do think that Ramsey will have to be played deeper. And I think Dan James.
Yeah.
And I do think certainly Harry Wilson starts that game for me. Oddly,
I would agree with that
over Brennan because I think of the work rate he'll put in, but I think Kiefer Moore will be the one that starts there. The physical nature, the impact he will have on crosses. As I say, they've conceded so many goals from wide areas coming into the box, the second balls and whatever. I think he'll be massive for that. So I think if you can imagine, you know, the balls coming in and Wilson and Ramsey sniffing around off Kiefer Moore and playing for second balls, and obviously he's more than capable of putting a good cross in the back of the net himself. So I think that's the one change. And nothing against Brennan Johnson. I just don't think defensively his work rate is the same as Harry Wilson's. And I think we'll need that because, as I say, they will look to attack us in wide areas and get in behind the fullback. So I think covering our defenders will help there.
I think also you can then say to Brennan just to go hell for leather in the Armenia game and know that Harry Wilson will come in the Turkey game if that's what you do. If you go to five at the back, who would you not be having at the front then? I think I'd be sacrificing James at that point.
I think I'd be sacrificing Wilson just because I think James's pace is the one thing that scares people. I think back to that game against the Czech Republic where we drew 2-2 away. He got a goal that day, obviously, but he was such a menace on the break. Him and Moore and Ramsey were just so all over the show. And it was his pace. People were scared to kind of square him up because they knew that he could knock the ball by him and run. And I think if the Turks get hold of the ball and try and press us a little bit, those out balls and the pace over the top of James is something that is just irreplaceable. So for me, I would be sacrificing Wilson there, which feels a bit harsh. But I think we could have the central three, Ramsey, Ampadu and Morel, and then let Dan James just, you know, be a bit of a menace really and see if he can play off more and recreate that little partnership that the three of them had where we were so good on the break. We wasted so many good chances in that game that we really should have won, and I think a lot of that came from their lack of willingness to commit to defending his pace and just hoping for the best, and it kind of didn't work. So I'm hoping that will happen again this time, but personally I think we'll stay with the four at the back.
Yeah, I think your argument that that's what we did in Croatia, why would we make it different against the Turks? I think that's probably the biggest argument for why we'd stay with four. Yeah, it seems to be the pattern. Yeah. And if we were prepared to do that in that first away game, why would we change things up?
To follow on from this, we've said that we're not going to win both games here. We've said that we'll win one and either draw or lose, depending on whether you believe Ruth or me, for the second game. Gawain in France has asked us, when was the last time we won back-to-back fixtures in a campaign in the same window, in inverted commas? So not two games after one each other, but two in the same, you know, over the same 5 days kind of thing. I assume you've done the same research as me, Ruth, and have come out with the answer.
Well, presumably we've got the same answer. Depends if you count friendlies or not. Because the last time we won two games in the same window was the Mexico friendly followed by the Czechia game. But that was actually a three in a window. But the Mexico was the middle and then we played Czechia in the third game. Looking at the competitive games, though, I had to go back to November 20. Are you seeing the same? Are you seeing the same pattern?
Yes, I didn't I didn't look at the
when
Mexico
we beat
games
the Republic of Ireland and Finland. Yes. And that feels like a long time ago, doesn't it?
From memory, that was obviously COVID. I remember the yellow card, the red card. So Uronen got a red card in that 3-1 game. I had to really watch that game back to gather any memory of it. And the same with the Ireland game. Brooks scored to give us a 1-0 win. But normally I'm quite good with that sort of thing. But I had zero memory of these two games. I think maybe it being played behind closed doors in Nations League, maybe it drifted from my mind a little bit. But yeah, that was the last time I had it. The last time, the thing I noticed about that, though, that both of those were home games. Mm-hmm. The last time we won a home and away doubleheader, so one of each, was 2 months earlier where we beat Finland away and Bulgaria at home behind closed doors. Nico Williams, if you remember, scored the 94th minute winner against Bulgaria. So that was interesting. But yeah, going back to 2020 was the last time that we did that, which isn't a great omen. But that's what happens, I suppose, if you only win three of your last 15 games. That sort of stat will happen. How are you feeling about them overall, Ruth? Are you excited? What's your overriding view on what's coming up?
I mean, excited, obviously. I love watching us play. It's the process, isn't it? It's watching the guys on the field. That's the key thing. We have to get three points on Friday. In some respects, I'm a little bit less worried about Monday. I think as much as anything, showing that we can be cohesive in our formation away in a very partisan crowd, difficult conditions, you know, a little bit like we saw against the Croats in March, that, you know, we can handle these sorts of situations. Obviously, as I said, I'd take a draw, but I don't think it's the end of the world if we lose this game. It obviously puts a pressure on us in the return leg, but I don't think it's the end of the world. We've got to get 3 points on Friday. So actually, I think my focus is primarily on Friday, really.
I agree that we've got to get 3 points Friday. I think for me, though, we do still have to go and get a point out in Turkey. I think it makes the Croatia point a little bit, I don't want to say worthless, but it changes its value because Croatia are still going to go on and win this group. So I think the Turks are still the team that we've got to play against if we want to come second. And I think we can't afford to lose it, not just because it puts pressure on the home game, but also because it gives them momentum and impetus going into what's coming up next season and all that sort of stuff. And I really want to, you know, establish ourselves as best as possible. I think winning this game and drawing with Turkey puts us a comfortable second in the group, and I think that is the sort of authority that we need to stamp on. And if people want to come to Cardiff to, you know, to get something from us, they're going to have to work, because then all of a sudden the pressure changes when they come to us. We maybe can afford a draw because we know we've already got something out there, and so on. So I think that's a big one for me. I think we've got to go and get something out there if we want to qualify.
I want to see that approach, but I'm not sure. I think the 3 points on Friday is more key, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
No, yeah. In that perspective, you're absolutely right. As we look to wrap up here, the two things I want to ask you about. I saw just before I came on to record that there's a bit of chat that the new Spurs boss, I can't say his name, Ange Pestos, there's a lot of rumours going around that he's going to get rid of Ben Davis. He doesn't think he's good enough. Do you think he's going to leave? And do you think that's quite a harsh assessment? Because I think Ben Davis has been in a low season for Spurs. He's been one of few stronger players. Really. I mean, I'd have him at Newcastle in a heartbeat.
How can he actually come to that conclusion right now?
Yeah.
Has he even met him? Has he seen him on the field live? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It seems a very strange. I wonder where that's actually coming from. Is it coming from this sort of undercurrent that Davies seems to have suffered from, almost like every other manager values him and every other manager doesn't want to play him, and he seems to fall in that sort of real extremes? Yeah. Yeah. And is it just somebody speculating that, okay, this is the cycle, this is the next thing that's going to happen? I think if he's not wanted, they'll cash out and he'll go to a good team, because if particularly if you want to play that three at the back with him on the left, I think there's very few options that are as good as him in the kind of price range, particularly in the kind of price range he would be. I think he'd get gobbled up, and you know, at that point, just go where you're appreciated. You know, it's like who were we talking about in the last Ampadu? We were talking about in the last pod of just find somewhere you can enjoy your football and get on with it. You know,
absolutely with a seamless.
Oh no, that was James. Sorry, it was Dan James we were talking about in that context. Yeah.
Oh, well, don't say that because that was almost a perfect link to what I was going to say next. But Ethan Ampadu.
Tell me about this Spezia game.
Yeah, honestly, Ruth, it was mad. I don't know if anyone who's listening watched it, but they went 1-0 down to Hellas Verona quite early on, and Ampadu equalised quite quickly, actually, after 15 minutes. It was a well-taken goal, a corner, the ball bobbles around afterwards, and he just lashes it. Bit of a deflection, takes it right into the top corner, off the bar and kind of down and then back up into the net. It was a real spectacular goal. It was his first career goal. I retweeted the video of that on our Twitter at Coleman's_dream if you want to go and have a look at that so you can see the goal. They conceded two goals about 10 minutes later in relatively quick succession to go 3-1 down. As I say, the third goal was, I don't want to say Ampadu's fault, but he was certainly, you know, on his heels a little bit, and as I say, the shot kind of deflected off him and went in. Didn't cover himself in glory, but I can't put all the blame on him because, as I say, the Spezia were terrible as a unit last night. They looked like not getting back into the game at all. They really looked lost, to be honest. And with about 20 minutes to go, a long punt forward by Ampadu, ironically, saw their centre forward kind of flick the ball over the goalkeeper. And as the ball was going in, one of the Hellas Verona players right on the line just kind of slapped the ball away with his hand. The ref gave the pen, sent off the Hellas Verona player. And I was like, here we go, 20 minutes, down to 10 men, penalty to come, you know, this is back on. Their centre forward, Umzola, I think he's called, with probably the worst penalty kick I've ever seen in my entire life. Just no power on it, wasn't even in the corner, just slightly to the side, and the keeper's been able to turn it round the post. The keeper, at this point, by the way, had an astonishing 20 minutes where he saved everything. He was ridiculous. Some of his feet made one save from a cross, which was headed, turned it round the post. Ridiculous save. He made some great saves, to be fair. And they just could not seem to get a goal there. They were a little bit unlucky on some occasions, some wasteful finishing on others. And at the end, with about 5 minutes ago, Ethan just thought, oh, sod this, I'm going up front. And whether it was an instruction or not, just stood up front. He was kind of loitering around for loose balls, and the ball came to him, perfect first touch control, and he's hit it on the volley after kind of teeing himself up, and it just thunders again, like almost right in the corner of the crossbar and post. Ridiculously good strike, mm-hmm. Just couldn't go in, and you knew it wasn't going to be their day, but... Yeah, it was a really strange game of football, and Spezia were desperately poor, so open in midfield, and how they were even in the playoff game, actually. As I say, I've seen the last three, but they were so bad. But yeah, I do feel for Ampadu, because through the games that I've watched this season, I've watched them a few times, and he's definitely been, and I'm not just biased, he's definitely been one of their better players. They've had a bit of a change of shape recently, which has moved him out of midfield, where he was really excelling, back into defence, and he just couldn't affect the game as much. And it's a shame, because, as I say, the lad who was in front of him, number 25, was... Oh, I just didn't know what he was doing. He was just running around quite a lot, and it was awful. Some of the crossing they were putting in, the guy who was playing left wing, I'm not exaggerating, you may as well have had me. I mean, there was one, he shanked the cross so far to the left, it just kind of like a full like slice with his left foot. And he was trying to put it in the box, and it essentially just went straight on out for a goal kick. Like, it was dire. But I do feel for him, and I do wonder what's going to happen to him next year, because he's definitely a midfielder. Yeah, I think I've come to that conclusion now in my eyes. He's definitely a midfielder, not a defender. He can still play there, and that versatility is helpful, but he's definitely a midfielder. And I hope he goes somewhere he's valued now. Someone pointed out it's three relegations in a row now, Sheffield United, Venezia, and now Spezia. So I hope he goes somewhere he's appreciated. But also, I think it must be quite tough for him mentally, playing in these teams and, you know, scrapping for every point, and three relegations on the bounce is pretty brutal. So I hope he goes somewhere. I've said before I'd have him at Newcastle. I think he's is an excellent player, and I think it'd be great for us as we're in the Champions League next season now to have him in midfield and offer some competition there, and certainly could play a role for us in the Premier League as well as in Europe. So I don't think it's going to happen, but you never know. But I do feel desperately sorry for him, because he was definitely one of the best players this season for them. And it was a brilliant, well, I say brilliant, difficult moment when someone had shanked a clearance and had gone basically straight at one of their own players. Ampadu turned round to whoever was nearest him and just said, "This is fucking shit, lads." Just as the camera kind of panned round to him, and he said it like straight down the lens of the camera, which did make me chuckle. But you could see he was so frustrated and fed up. It was a real shame. But yeah, unfortunately, they get relegated. So he's back to Chelsea. His loan finishes, and it'll be interesting to see where he goes next. Have you got anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I was reading a very short piece in the week from a Spezia fan that was talking about him, and he was saying basically that to all intents and purposes, Ampadu has been their captain in sort of every sense reality on the field. And he was very impressed and obviously would have loved to have kept him on next season. I think Chelsea have just got to make some decisions. Yeah. They just can't keep farming him out year on year in this sort of ad hoc way. It's not developmentally, I'm sure it's helping in the sense that he's getting regular play time, but this a year here, a year here, a year here, that can't be beneficial ultimately. And so I don't understand how for their desire to grow a player that's on their books, they don't find some sort of more settled situation for him. Either sell him and let him get settled or find him somewhere where he can actually progress as opposed to just scrap, which seems to have been what the pattern's been lately.
No, I totally agree. I also love the way you use the words playtime there, Ruth, as if he's a 9-year-old. Right, guys, it's playtime. Let Ethan have the ball. I agree. I think he's got to... We've mentioned it with Dan James before, as you said previous there. We were talking about it. But it's the same as true for him, is that he's got to get somewhere where he can play regularly. And I think just settle down. I also think positionally, he needs to be a bit more firm, I guess. And, you know, he needs to play midfield. That's his best position. He needs to go somewhere where he can do that. And I think he needs to... You know, I think part of the reason he's kind of a bit hit and miss at times, as he was yesterday, is because he's been playing in midfield and defence. I think he needs to play somewhere and be worked on with someone who's going to make him into, I would say, a midfielder, or someone else can say a defender, either or, but where he does the one or the other. I think doing both is really not helpful him developmentally. And I think that would be a big deal for him. But who knows? Fingers crossed that he gets somewhere next season. As we've just ticked over the hour mark, Ruth, I think it is time we wrap things up here. Have you got anything else?
No, just safe journey. Have a great time in Turkey.
Thank you very much. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Please try and get some drunken commentary along the way. That was hilarious last window.
I will do. I don't know if Christian listens after we played him last time, but if you are listening, mate, please do send me a message if you're going to Turkey. I would absolutely love to chat to you again. That was hilarious. I will definitely do that. Keep an eye out on ColemanHadADream.com for match reviews, previews and match ratings. Support us at buymeacoffee.com/Coleman's Dream and go to BagsyBags.com and buy some great stuff made in the Rhondda and use the code CHAD10 for 10% off. Ruth, thank you very much for your time.
Yep, you're welcome. That was good. It's always good to be talking about games coming up. This is always the kind of like that nervous yet excited stage, and then next freak is reality, unfortunately.
Exactly. Well, we're just nervous. Okay, well, there you go, ladies and gents. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy the game, Ruth. Good luck to the boys. And if anyone sees us out in Samsun, or Istanbul for that matter, please do come and say hello. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Bye-bye.